Hi, everybody. We've been thinking and praying and hopefully doing some missional stuff over the last few months. And today we come to the end of our series. So what now? Last year, my brother and sister-in-law sent me a package with a scarf, and the label on the scarf caught my attention. It said, "Our mission. We are striving to create a better future by sharing warmth and supporting people to care for each other and the planet." Sometimes churches, as well as scarves, have mission statements too, such as love God and love our community. And these are great, but I sometimes wonder if perhaps they're rather too broad to be of much practical use. As we thought about, the Baptist Union Declaration of Principle says that it is the duty of every disciple to bear personal witness to the gospel of Jesus Christ and to take part in the evangelisation of the world. And I agree with it, but it's suitably big enough to hide behind and hope that someone else does the job. It's why Light of Life has values: spirituality, hospitality and Sabbath. These are our in, up, out of faith language that perhaps you might be familiar with. Spirituality is the in, our discipleship. Sabbath is the up, our worship of God. And hospitality, the out, our mission. Our values are the things that we hold dear and seek to work out in practice. Do find out more at our next family meeting on the 19th of October. We've covered many areas ranging from mission being for every follower of Jesus. Mission means going and living authentic lives, complete with our uncertainties, failures, questions and vulnerability. It's not about dragging others into the building to get numbers up, but sharing Jesus' love with others so that they too can grow in their understanding of him. We looked at how we can share our story simply and what the gospel is in a nutshell, and that we don't go in our own strength, but with Jesus' authority and with the gift of the Holy Spirit to empower us. Over the summer, Gemma and Kathy helped us think about who God might be calling us to go to. As always, let's look to Jesus, because his mission defines ours. Jesus' mission was incarnational, and we'll be thinking more about that at Christmas. He left heaven to become human and embedded himself within the customs of his day in first century Palestine. He spoke the language, or languages, Aramaic, Hebrew, Greek and Latin. And that's pretty impressive, four languages. Well, it certainly is for me. I'm a typical Brit who doesn't really speak any other languages. Scraped a C at GCSE in French, but I don't really remember that. But Jesus is God. He created all the languages, and God limits himself for our sake. I wonder, do we limit ourselves for the sake of others? Jesus spoke in parables. He used simple everyday situations, like a lost coin, seeds, salt, light and landowners, to speak words of life and love, healing and justice. Neither do we need grand illustrations or even a deep knowledge of the Bible, just a deep love of the life that Jesus gives us and a love for others. We've learnt that it's crucial to know the context of a passage when we read the Bible. It's also crucial to understand the context when we're thinking in missional terms. Jesus rooted himself in a specific context, that of the Jewish people. He inherently understood their customs, joys, struggles, and it gave him credibility when speaking to them. He didn't just swoop in from outside. Jesus is not simply leading humanity up the garden path. He really gets what it's like to be human, yet at the same time shows us how to live a life in all its fullness. Context is the key. In the book of Acts, it's a story of the mission of the early church. It's a narrative. It's not a manual, but there's so much to draw inspiration from. And in Acts 17, there's a fantastic bit of knowing how to work within your own setting. Paul is on his missionary tour and he's reached Athens, the Greek centre for education and culture. We see him in a variety of contexts, with the religious and pagan, with common people in the marketplace where he does a bit of street evangelism, and with the academic Stoic philosophers. I suggest you read Acts 17, verses 16 to 34, to see how Paul adapts his knowledge of the subcultures to help him better explain the good news of Jesus to a variety of people. How can he help them understand that a crucified criminal was God? How is he going to convince them that Jesus was raised from the dead? As Paul stood in the marketplace, he would have seen the temples, the stalls and altars devoted to the imperial cult, and a plethora of gods. Paul utilises the cultural love of oration in the marketplace and is then invited to speak at the Areopagus, the centre where the council met to debate matters of public concern. They wanted to know who this new god is that Paul was speaking about and if he was worth adopting alongside all the other gods. Paul uses his God-given talent for public speaking. He sees that the city is full of idols and says, "People of Athens, I see that you in every way are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To an unknown God.' So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship, and this is what I am going to proclaim to you." And so he goes on, "I wonder, do we use our God-given talents for mission?" Paul puts the gospel into their context, but using wisdom and respect. He doesn't quote the Old Testament scriptures as he did with the Jews. That would mean little to the pagans, but instead quotes not one, but two of the three modern-day schools of thought. "In him we live and move and have our being, and we are his offspring." He uses things that are important to them as common ground, like stepping stones, to speak about God. He says God doesn't dwell in a temple and doesn't need a sacrifice to sustain him. Conversely, God gives life. God sustains everything. I suppose it's like us quoting something we've seen on Facebook or citing a TV character in a drama that behaves in a certain way, things that are in line with Christian thought. It may mean more to someone who doesn't know Jesus, because perhaps they know that TV series. And note, Paul doesn't condemn pagan immorality. In fact, we never see Paul doing this. Rather, he teaches about Jesus positively. And did you notice there's actually no reference at this point to the cross? The Greeks were covering themselves, fearful of offending an unknown god, by having an altar to appease, just in case they missed a god somewhere. Paul said, "This God who you don't know is the one I'm telling you about. He made the world and gives us life." And Paul answered another question that a philosophically minded person would have. If God is supreme, why does he not punish us? Well, Paul says God overlooked ignorance, but now they know they'd better do something about it because God is just. Not everyone got what Paul said, just as not everyone followed Jesus, but a significant number did. Paul adapted his message and strategy depending on the audience he faced. And in 1 Corinthians 9 he says, "Though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but I'm under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak, I became weak to win the weak. I have become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings." So what's your context? You probably have more than one. Are you embracing it? Do you spend quality time with people that you live alongside in your street, your family, your workplace, your school? People don't want us proclaiming Jesus' coming kingdom to them if we haven't earned the right by being rooted in their world. And people need to see close up in us how following Jesus works in reality. That leads us to action. Jesus loved all people, especially outcasts and those overlooked, especially those who were sitting on their own and who needed healing. We still need to hear this because we still sit in our own comfortable groupings, even with those we know at church. Jesus proclaimed the coming kingdom. He was a signpost, the rule of God's love and justice and healing and restoration and peace. In Luke 7:18, John the Baptist asked Jesus, "Are you the one?" And Jesus' answer was, "Look at the evidence for what's happening. The blind see and the lame walk." When we know our context, we need to take action. That's why Howie is volunteering in the Great Yarmouth Football Club charity, and Marie and I are volunteering at the Stay and Play in Ormsby. We're taking action, embedding ourselves and loving others within that context. In James 2, verse 14, we read, "What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or a sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, keep warm and well fed,' but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself is not, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say, 'You have faith, I have deeds.' Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. You believe that there is one God. Good. Even the demons believe that and shudder. You foolish person, do you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless?" Last year, Kevin and I were at a National Trust property. We usually flit around the houses because we really go for the grounds and we just feel a bit obliged to take a quick peep inside. And we were in one room doing our usual whiz round when we got cornered, and I really mean physically cornered, by an over-enthusiastic volunteer who had her own theory on a particular painting which she wanted to share. Neither of us were in the least interested in what she had to say after the first minute, but she gave us no choice but to listen until we could excuse ourselves. She gave us a challenge as well to look at another item in the room and answer a question about it so we could return to her with the answer. You'll not be surprised to learn that we ran at the first opportunity we could in the other direction while she had someone else cornered and wasn't looking our way. I think that's sometimes how we imagine mission. And understandably, we don't want to put others in that situation. Contrast that with something else. A friend of mine is learning to speak Italian, and I bought her a colouring book from Italy. It's one of those colouring books that says things like, finish drawing the trees in the forest, or draw a picture of yourself in the frame. It's all in Italian, of course, and I hoped it would be a fun way to learn. And do you know what it is? You can half guess what the words are saying because of the pictures, but it really entices you to look up the words. It whets your appetite to know more. What if our mission with others left the other wanting to know more? What if by our words and actions they understood just enough and some of the pictures made sense but actually attracted more inquiry? Then we can be the ones to translate more of the good news of Jesus for them. And the great bit is this: not only will they be blessed, but we will be also. Verse 23 of the passage in 1 Corinthians 9 that I read to you earlier, you may have picked up on this. The last thing Paul says is, "I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings." Well, who's not going to want to share in all the blessings of peace and justice and joy, healing and love? Do you want to be blessed? Do you want to bless others with this rich, colourful, challenging and exciting life in all its fullness? So I leave you with some thoughts. Three words. What three words? Context, action, and blessing. What's your context? What does the good news look like in this context? What language are you speaking? Is it understandable to those around you? Do our words match our actions?
take action and be blessed. Jesus says, as the Father has sent me, so I am sending you. Amen. Next week on the 15th of September, Mark is going to be baptised, 10 o'clock. Please note the time, 10 a.m. on Caister Beach, followed by a service at the chapel at 10:30 a.m., where he's going to be sharing a bit of his journey of faith, along with communion, cake and celebration. Do join us.